Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack today's political issues and trends. Probably the biggest political development in our politics in the last week was the announcement by John Steenhuisen that he would not stand for re-election as leader of the Democratic Alliance. The party is due to elect a new leader at its National Congress in April. To discuss the meaning of Steenhuisen's decision and its likely impact on the DA and South African politics, we're joined by veteran journalist Peter Bruce, who's a Sunday Times columnist and the host of Podcasts from the Edge, as well as Kanye Makubane, who's a political analyst and commentator.
I will not seek re-election for a third term as the DA federal leader at the party's upcoming federal congress.
We're not going to take over the country and then eat the money of the people, no. We're not.
You're dealing with Jacob Zuma. Every stage is a theater for him.
American business has always been here with us side by side. And even as we speak, they are here.
You cannot use the platform of the ANC to come and boo the ANC Secretary General because you are unhappy.
We are not going to have a parallel government run by Helen Zille. There's one president here, and that president is Cyril Ramaphosa.
We will not be bullied.
The people of Palestine, they're denied the right to enjoy the freedoms we so love.
Don't push me. I will talk.
Welcome to the weekly podcast, to Peter and to Kani.
Nice to be here.
Thank you very much.
Peter, can I start with you? If for no other reason, because you wrote a column in the Sunday Times talking about the developments in the Democratic Alliance. Now, maybe let's get this out of the way first. You know, one of the enduring questions of the last week was whether Steenhuisen jumped or whether he was pushed. So, which are we supposed to believe? You know, in your estimation,
Mike. When he made his speech the other day, he made a point of saying that it was his own call, but I'm sure there was a bit of both in there. It was reasonably well known that many of the DA's funders were casting around for other leadership. There was some unease about giving money to the party, but it's a moot point in a way. He's no longer going to stand, and I'm sure there was push and pull in that decision. Maybe an equal measure, I can't be sure. But there was certainly, you know, the DA has been a bit divided about John Steenhuisen, and the funders have too.
Hmm. And the issues, the other, because I'm trying to understand whether this was, like, how much the ideological issues played versus the other issues, you know, regarding, for example, foot and mouth, regarding the credit card scandal and all of that.
Yeah.
In other words, could some of the things be a pretext for a broader political stroke ideological issue?
Yeah. Look, I think whatever pushed John or whatever made him want to leave, it would have been largely internal. I don't think the foot and mouth disease crisis had anything to do with him leaving. There'd been some criticism of the way he's handled the crisis, some of it quite strong, some of it pretty weak, some of it clearly personal, some of it not. There's been pressure on him from inside the party for almost, 2 years now. And this is the result. The funders wanted another leader, and they're now going to get one. We don't know who. Jordan Hill Lewis, the mayor of Cape Town, seems to be the front runner. And my suspicion is that he's the person who the funders would be most comfortable with. But I don't think foot and mouth has played any role in this whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Peter says, he has just explained that he believes that the funders, among other people, wanted Steenhuisen to, you know, to be removed, you know, and also that inside the party there was pressure for him to leave. But from where you're sitting, what kind of leader then is the DA should it be looking for? If it's not Steenhuisen, then what kind of leader? Should they be looking for, or are they looking for?
Well, I think the DA has tried different types of leaders.
The DA has tried different types of leaders. You know, when it brought in Musi Maimane and he was the leader, they were looking for something specific. They were looking for the black vote, not just the black vote, but to increase their footprint, particularly in black areas where they did not traditionally have large footprints. And I mean, I think somewhere along the line, somebody called it a failed experiment. And then they brought in Steenhuisen. And Steenhuisen was a firebrand, especially when he was in parliament as the chief whip of the Democratic Alliance leading that caucus. You know, he came into what was regarded as a fractured party because the DA had lost a lot of its constituents to the Freedom Front Plus, to Solidarity, you know, and they needed to get those voters back. And John was seen as a unifying factor. And for many years before they went into the GNU, he was doing quite well. Hence, he was re-elected almost, without opposition, you know, over the past two terms. And there was even a sense, I think his election manager, McPherson, had said that had John run again, he would have been elected unopposed for a third term. But things changed along the way, you know, and I don't want to get ahead of myself in this discussion, but what you alluded to, Mike, some of his own compromised financial positions, but also what he had to do in order to keep the DA in the GNU might have been misconstrued by the electorate as him compromising the stance and the mandate that he was sent in into the GNU and the National Cabinet with. But I think we're going to get into those issues a little bit further. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Mm. And Pete, your view would be what? You know, what kind of leader should the DA be looking for?
Yeah. So just to pick up on what Kanye was saying, you know, this change has been driven from inside the party. It's difficult to say who's on whose side and for what reason or other. But I suspect that the issue with the DA joining the GNU, which Steenhuisen led and drove, and which, you know, on the basis of broad consideration, was a good decision, nevertheless has seen the DA lose that kind of sharp edge as an opposition force, right? Which he represented himself when he was chief whip in parliament. He was very aggressive, very combative. And, you know, there's a large part of the DA and its supporters that like that. And it's been largely silent now. And so what I think they're going to look for is someone who can combine being in the government, being in the GNU, but also not losing its voice. You know, a very good example of this would have been Emma Powell, who used to be the foreign affairs spokesperson for the DA, who was quite loud and, you know, out there soon after the sort of Trump election last year, and then resigned. You know, she came under tremendous sort of pressure. Nobody really came to her defense. And we haven't heard anything from the DA since then about foreign policy. There is apparently somebody who's, John Steenhuisen has made foreign affairs spokesman, but they've been largely quiet. And I think that what the funders are missing, and what a lot of DA MPs and supporters are missing, is that sharper edge of criticism, while also supplying, you know, support within the government and playing its role in the government. I think people like the GNU, they like the fact that it's there, but they miss the DA also of old, which in many ways was represented by Steenhuisen in Parliament, because he was always jumping up and down and speaking over people and being, you know, he was very aggressive, and it was, I think, people quite liked that.
Yeah, Kanye, so off the back of what Peter has just said, you know, if we were to assess the DA's joining the GNU and by implication Steenhuisen, you know, because he's the leader, you know, who was there when this, would you say that it was on the balance of factors, would you say that it was a good thing for the DA or not a good thing for the DA?
Okay, so in terms of whether it was a good or a bad thing, it was an opportunity and they took it. You know, because this would be the very first time that the DA has a presence at a national level, and they were given quite strong portfolios within the GNU. I mean, home affairs, basic education, forestries, and the deputy ministerial role within the DTIC. Those are strong cabinet portfolios. And I think that the DA was smart enough to know that if they had, as they'd been calling themselves, the government in waiting, if there was ever an opportunity for them to gain proximity to making that a reality, then, you know, the GNU would be the first vehicle through which they can start making, you know, their presence felt within the national cabinet. What I think happened, though, is that the electorate were not brought along with it to understand that there's a difference between party and state. You know, there's a difference between John, the DA leader, and there's a difference between John, the leader within the cabinet, because whether the ministers come from different political parties. Once you form a national cabinet, you really are representing a national interest. And so as much as they came in with, you know, fighting the Bila Act, fighting the VAT, and the many other issues that initially, you know, caused us to panic a little bit that this GNU would be over before it even started, we eventually saw them through John starting to reach a compromise, starting to reach the middle point. And you'll remember that the NEC of the ANC was calling for the reconfiguration of the GNU quite strongly because they didn't want the DA in there. And also Fikile Mbalula, the SG, has always maintained that there's an open door for the DA. And if they wanted to leave, they could leave at any time because they were not kept there by duress. So I think that, you know, John, for the first time, got to taste, and the DA at a whole got to taste what it's like to be the government. It's one thing to constantly be criticizing the government from the pews of the opposition, but when you are the government, it's a different story. And there's one leader there, and that is the president. And the president expects his cabinet to all be singing from the same hymn sheet. And that's why we saw John, you know, settling in, softening the tone of the DA. And this, of course, made the electorate to see red. They saw him as the Judas Iscariot of politics.
Do you buy that view, though, that Steenhuisen had been co-opted by the ANC in the GNU?
Well, I don't know whether it's a matter of buying, but it was a matter of John being a smart politician and realizing that there's certain things that he needs to do, first of all, to keep the DA in the GNU, but secondly, to protect those portfolios that they are enjoying currently. Because if they continue to push the hard line, it would have forced them literally out of the GNU. And when it came, you know, to the crunch, when the DA had to sit and you know, go back to the table and ask themselves, do we really want to be here? It became clear for them that as much as there are ideological differences with the ANC, with the Patriotic Alliance, Freedom Front Plus, and all the other parties that form the GNU, however, you know, in terms of the party's growth and progression, this is probably the highest level that the DA has ever, you know, experienced in terms of governing outside of a local and provincial government. So I think they are intentional about being in the GNU. And, you know, John has asked that he stays and sees his portfolio through to 2029. I have my own views. I think the DA will betray him. I don't think they will honor that agreement. I think that when the new leader comes in, let's say it is Jordan Hill-Lewis, he's a mayor currently, and I don't think he'll be happy with being a mayor and an ordinary member of the Democratic Alliance in the form of John Steenhuisen being a minister. So I think we're definitely still going to see a shuffle within the DA ministries within the cabinet.
I think that what is going to happen is that John will continue as agriculture minister in the government. He has a big fight on his hands with foot and mouth disease, and he may or may not, and only time will tell, have made some poor choices. Decisions in the pursuit of fixing this disease. You know, foot and mouth didn't start when he became agriculture minister. Foot and mouth has been part of our story for as long as I can remember. You know, back in my day as a child and growing up in Transkei, Foot and Mouth was controlled by the communities. There were people who had a dipping book, and every village had a dipping book, and you dipped your cattle once a month or you were in trouble. And those things have all fallen by the wayside in the last three decades. So the control of these things has fallen apart, and it's not his fault. How you fix it is his problem. And it's late in the day now. It's widespread. Nobody, you know, we can't export our meat. It's a big, potentially big product. So if you can get it going again, you know, that would be fantastic. But it's going to take, I was just talking to the great Wandile Sihlobo the other day, it's going to take not one vaccination, but a booster and possibly two further vaccinations. So it's going to take at least once you start vaccinating, it's going to take 3 or 4 years to control. Before we can export any beef to anyone. And so that's a real problem for him. By that stage, of course, 2029 looms. I don't know whether the DA would get rid of him. It would all depend, I suppose, on what relationship he has with the next party leader. Okay. He's been a very controlling leader, and you can see that. You know, if you as a journalist now, or TV, or on newsprint or other media, if you want to call up a DA MP and get their opinion on something, just whatever, they're not going to tell you because they can't. They're not allowed to. They're not allowed to speak outside of their structures to you as a journalist on the record. And so those sorts of things eat away at your support within a parliamentary party, which feels, I think, increasingly not useless, but underused.
Yeah.
And so what I think where he's made his error is he hasn't got the balance right. He wanted to keep the GNU stable, but in doing so, he angered a lot of his potential supporters in the party and certainly the funders. And there has to be a better way to manage this process. You know, it must be possible to be in the GNU, not threaten it every second the ANC comes up with new legislation that you don't like, but also not to be quiet and let things slip through, because that's what they have been, apart from the VAT.
I'd like us to move on from John shortly, so that we can talk, because I'd like us to touch on the future of the DA, you know, going forward. But can you had not finished your thought about what you think might happen to John Steenhuisen post this, where you seem to be saying that they might betray him?
Well, I mean, that's just me, projecting in the future, because we know that in politics, friends today are enemies tomorrow, enemies today are friends tomorrow. So I don't hold any politician in high regard, especially any promise they make. So I do think that in terms of hierarchy, a mayor and a cabinet minister are two very different portfolios. And if Jordan Hill Lewis does come in as the new leader of the Democratic Alliance, I think as much as John has requested in his negotiated exit that he be allowed to finish his term, I don't think that they will honor that. And in the instance that does happen, I think it wouldn't even be the worst thing ever, because then he'll get an opportunity to go back to Parliament and go back to the DA caucus, now having public service experience, now having, you know, being in a better level of a politician than he was when he was just, you know, screaming from the pews of the opposition. Now he's got real tangible experience, and I think he will contribute quite significantly in the different portfolio committees within Parliament. So I think that, you know, if John is smart, he should prepare, you know, that it may not go his way according to the way that he has negotiated for him not to stand for this leadership race.
Peter, shall I come back to you in terms of the GNU itself? What do you think the DA should be treating the GNU going forward, especially now that we're going to be heading into election season, you know, either into an election cycle, either for the local elections or for the national elections proper?
Well, I mean, the local election is going to be really difficult, you know, partly because even if you just contain it to local election issues, there's governance of municipalities around the country. That's extremely difficult. There are efforts, you know, to modernize local government in South Africa. And you know, if the DA is going to campaign on roughly the same promises that the ANC is going to make, it's not going to create enough blue water between the two parties. So it's going to have its own formula and its own points to make and to drive its campaign on what's to be done with local government. You know, does the district development model work? Does anybody even know what the district development model is? Because it's very confusing. And I'm not going to embarrass you, Mark, by asking you to describe it to me, because it's very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, I read a report done by some very paid for by the government, done by some very serious people last year, and they discovered that nobody knew what the district development model is or what it's there for, what it's supposed to do. So, you know, do we have a Marshall Plan for municipalities? Do we strip them of their powers? Do we give them more powers? Do we just give them money? So the ANC, hopefully, and the DA will have interesting and different answers to those questions. And, you know, the DA's answer to those questions is going to be critical. I hope that they start talking more about allowing more competition between municipalities. In other words, if I'm a well-run municipality, let's say, I mean, take a poor part of the country, Transkei. It's so interesting. So if you go, there's a mayor in Transkei, and I'm unsure of his name at the moment, but he used to be the mayor of a small town called Ingobo. Ingobo was it was a wasteland. I don't know if you've ever visited, Mike, a terrible-looking place, fallen apart, litter everywhere, sewage flowing down the street, complete disaster. He comes in and he cleans it. It was quite extraordinary. And then he left Ingobo to go to Butterworth. And he did the same thing in Butterworth. But in the meanwhile, Ingobo went back to its original state of falling apart. So there are good people around. It just depends where you find them and how you look after them. But having said that about the people involved, the overall policy of what your approach is going to be critical. I think, hopefully, the DA will start to talk about this. There should be more competition between cities, particularly. You know, a city that can run its own transport should be allowed to run its own transport, run its own hospitals, run its own whatever. And if you don't know, if you can't run a roads department, it should be taken away from you and given to somebody who can at some other tier of government. At the moment, everyone has the same powers. It's ridiculous because some people do well and some people do it badly, and there's no change.
In the meantime, Peter, do you think, just briefly, the DA should stay in the GNU at this stage?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I think so. And they put it this way: they shouldn't be the ones to end to walk away. I mean, if somebody kicks them out, or if the ANC makes it impossible for the president to continue to entertain the DA and his cabinet, that won't be their fault. But I think it would be a real mistake now for the DA to cause the collapse of the GNU. There are going to be lots of barriers to come, unfortunately, and some of them are in the works. There's lots of legislation coming that's, you know, to my mind, and it's incredibly dangerous. There's the business licensing bill. There's, you know, all sorts of things. None of which make it easier for people to do business and create jobs. All they do is make it more sort of politically correct, which is secondary in my view to creating creating wealth and for everybody. And so, I think to the extent that they're in there, they're a better influence on government than they would be were they out. So, you know, Home Affairs is a different organization just from looking at it from the outside since Leon Schreiber became minister. There may well be things that he's implementing that were planned, but they weren't being done. And now he is doing them. And the same for Dean McPherson. You know, he goes on and on about it, but these things are very hard to do. And as the DA is finding out, and as, you know, we were hearing earlier, it's not easy to be in government. But it's not impossible either. And And so to the extent that DA ministers are getting down to business and doing the things even that other administrations might have first introduced, that's fine and it's a good thing. What's not good is that they lose in the process, because they're scared of upsetting everybody, that they lose the ability to be critical and sharp and flex their own muscle in the GNU, not by threatening to leave, but by making life uncomfortable for people who are making bad decisions.
Yeah, so Pete, I wanted us to go moving on from the GNU issue to go to the broader politics, you know, to say on in your column. You mentioned quite a number of things that you are flagging to say the DA must deal with. Yeah. One of them is the race issue, you know, and attached to that, the whole issue of redress and transformation.
Yeah.
You seem to be critical in the way that the DA has handled the issue.
I'm critical as a liberal. So, you know, if you have to go back a little bit, and Helen Ziller, for whom I have a lot of time, she went out of her way to bring senior black people into the party. And you remember there was Lindiwe Mazibuko, there was Mampile Rampele, and Musi. These were all people who were going to be parachuted in, right? And all of them, in one way or another, ended unhappily. And then after the election in 2019, in which the party didn't do as well as it had expected, and in which Musi Maimane made some fatal errors, and you might remember the one about the teacher, I think it was in Schwarzenegger, who was accused of dividing her class into black and white, and there was a picture of two black kids in her class sitting alone. And he, instead of being a bit more measured about it, he went straight for the race explanation. And it turned out, and I can't remember the detail, but it turned out that the teacher was completely innocent of any of that stuff and hadn't been dividing the class, and that, you know, she hadn't done anything wrong. But by which time, Musi had really angered quite a lot of the DA's white votes. And so they wandered off into the arms of the Freedom Front. Plus, in that part of the country, it's not a very big jump to make for those people. And so after that election, you remember Musi asked for a board of inquiry, which included Tony Leon, Ryan Kutsia, and Michel Leroux, I think, is one of the financiers, to do a report on the election. I don't know whether you remember this.
Yeah, I remember.
And in their
report,
they recommended that a whole lot of people, including the federal executive chairman, a federal executive chair, and the leader, should be removed from their posts. And both of those people resigned, including Musi Maimane. You know, for Athol, John and others now to argue that Musi walked away from the job, it's just ridiculous. I mean, he was given no choice. He was pulled out of the leadership, and, you know, he had to go. You don't stick around after that kind of treatment. Anyway, after this, there was a conference. And at the conference, the DA adopted a series of policies, many of them led by Gwen Ngwenya, who was then head of policy, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And so they adopted, first of all, they adopted, and I might be getting my sequencing wrong here, but they adopted what they call an economic justice policy, which involved basically cutting and pasting the United Nations development social development goals, right? Be nice to people. Everyone needs water. Everyone needs food, et cetera, et cetera. Those were the economic. And then they decided that they would no longer make any reference to race in any of their policies. And the linguistic trick in there was to say, we will no longer use race as a proxy for disadvantage. So the word race, black, whatever it might be, doesn't appear in any DA document anymore. And I've always felt that was a very conceited thing to do and a very illiberal thing to do. And I've said so many times, it's nothing new. There had to be a way, and there's going to have to be a way now. You know, whoever becomes the new leader can't now go and overturn that rule. That would be silly. But they have to find a way to make it so that the DA not only talks directly to black people, but that black people feel that they're being directly spoken to. And John Steenhuisen hasn't been able to do that. He hasn't really even tried. Hmm. And neither has the party. And that's why, in my view, they did so poorly in the election in 2024. Musi Maimane got 24.5 of the vote, and John Steenhuisen got 21.7 of the vote. Well, I mean, that's hardly, you know, a great leap forward, to use Chinese terminology. And they have to do a lot better than that. You know, if the DA wants to make any difference in the national government, in a government of national unity, it's got to be getting north of 25% of the national vote, and it's got to be getting close to 30. Otherwise, it's just a smaller, it's a big, small party, or it's just, you know, it's a small, bigger party. And it's not quite, you know, you can still be pushed around. John Cena, Cyril can tell you, actually, no, you're not going to get trade and industry, you're going to get agriculture, or whatever it might be. And you're a bit of a cork in a stormy sea. You're not able to really put your foot down on policy as a whole. You can, you know, you can guide your different ministries that you've been given, but you can't really make that big of a difference.
But someone, Pete, might say that maybe that the DA would be better off actually not trying to appeal to both black and white voters. That they should rather be concentrating on their traditional support base, especially given the threat that's coming from the right. What would you say to that? Our politics is so divided in any case that it's almost impossible to appeal to all your traditional white base and a new black base.
Yeah. No, I understand exactly what you mean. My point of view is that the ANC has run this country badly enough for there to be a significant pocket of black voters who have come adrift from the ANC. And I'm not talking about they've gone to MKP or to the EFF. There's a middle-class black vote there, which I think is available to a party sensibly run and with sensible and attractive policies. You don't have to, you know, BEE is not going to be sold by the DA, and I think that's not a bad thing at all. But, you know, if you're just going to hold on to your base, or hold on to what you got, you're 20% forever. And you'll carry on losing little bit by bit to the FF Plus and parties to the right of you, Cape Independence or whatever they may be. There's no stopping that. Look at the world around you. Look at Trump and the issues that he's caused, you know, the kind of nationalism that's apparent now. So nationalism is alive and well in the world. And, you know, I think it's the job of a liberal centrist party to fight it. And I don't think you fight it by clinging to people who are hanging on to you by their fingernails. I think you have to make a proposition to a broad non-racial base of voters based on their class rather than on their race. And I think you have to be brave enough to try, otherwise you'll never know. You know, Musi Maimane, and we forget this, Musi Maimane, when in the local government elections, were they in 21, Bramak? I think so. In 21, you know what, do you remember the percentage the DA won in that vote? It was over 26%. The DA hasn't come close to that since then. And he was punished. He wasn't rewarded for that. He was punished for not doing well in the last general election, and then 2019 general election. But he did incredibly well in the local government, not the 21. The local elections before that, I think it was 2016. He got over 26%. And the DA has not come to those numbers since he did that. So we mustn't, I have to, because this is my ideology, I suppose. I'm a middle of the road liberal. And I think there's a place for us. And I think it's a 30% place if we try, and not a 20% place if we just hold on to what we've got.
Yeah. Just before we wrap up, Pete, I want us to go to Jordan Hill-Lewis. In your column, you said that, you know, although all bets seem to be on him becoming the next leader, you said it would be better if he were challenged, actually. Why do you think so?
Yeah, I'm sure that. I think it's the 26th or 27th of February, the nominations for the leadership at the DA close, right? And then after that, it's a race for the leadership. And I think it would be good to have a contest. I don't know what Jordan Hill Lewis feels about Donald Trump or what he feels about our trade balance with China or Europe or the US. I don't know anything about him other than that he's been a very happy and active and busy mayor and a successful mayor by all looks of it of Cape Town. We know that he has a track record. He was Helen Ziller's chief of staff, and he might even have been John Steenhuisen's chief of staff. And they're quite good friends. So I think that a contest would draw him out a little bit, and we could get to know a little bit more about him. What you don't want is for some no-hoper person to challenge, because then it becomes just a silly thing. But wouldn't it be great, you know, for the Sunday Times if you could have, you know, over successive Sundays, you know, my manifesto by Jordan Hill Lewis or my manifesto by whoever might be challenging, those would be something worth talking about. They would cause conversation and debate. And so we need to know more about Jordan Hill Lewis, who I think is going to be the next leader. And I don't want to find it out the day after he becomes leader. I'd like to know now, please, so we know what to expect. And somebody's got to ask him, you know, how will you relate to the cabinet ministers? Are you going to tell them what to do? Because it's his right to tell them what to do. Or, you know, he has to get the party to have a policy which they then have to somehow represent in cabinet. So it's going to be a really interesting dynamic, particularly if he wants to continue being the mayor of Cape Town. I'm not sure how long that will last. He may just be saying it, although he clearly likes the job. He can't. It's too late now to change candidates for the local government elections this year. So he has to be the mayoral candidate as well. But would he see out a full term as mayor of Cape Town from the next local government elections or not, I think is a question we can all wonder about. Mm.
And if John Steenhuisen has been criticized for either being too sweet towards the ANC or being co-opted, etc., or not being combative enough, do you think that Jordan Hill Lewis will do better? He comes across to me like the gentleman of politics. You know, he doesn't seem like a street fighter.
The baby face, and he looks very sweet. And
that's how he comes across.
You want to give him a sweet or something like that.
But yeah.
Look, he has to. There must be some toughness in there, and you know, we're going to have to find out. I don't think the story about the DA being co-opted is true. I don't buy that at all. But you know what has happened is that in order to control the party, in order to control its presence in the government, they've also tried to control the party. And so what you have is that debate in the party has been suppressed in order to make life comfortable in cabinet, and that's not the way forward. The DA needs to be a lively, combative and passionate place, you know, and not be frightened, and particularly not be frightened of ideas, you know, and that's where they've fallen. And I'm afraid, you know, I think that's why John came under pressure to stand aside.
Now that we've got Kanye back on, I think I'll give the last word to Kanye. Kanye, welcome back. I'm glad we could get you back on. We were talking with Peter about the choices or the juggling that the DA would need to, you know, to do from an electoral appealability point of view, to say, should it stay a party that has got whose core is, you know, like its traditional white support base, or should it try? Does its future lie in expanding its base and reaching out to a black constituency, which is where the growth is going to happen anyway? So I was asking Peter how feasible or doable that is. What's your view?
Well, I think that, you know, we are clear about the white electorate, and we're also clear about the black electorate. But there's also the other part of the colored and the Indian voters that we sometimes overlook along the way, you know, and they are also a very influential a group of constituents, which the Democratic Alliance, you know, is in direct competition with, whether you're talking about the Good Party under Patricia de Lille, whether you're talking about the Patriotic Alliance under Gayton McKenzie and Kenny Gunyene. And so I think that that's somewhere somehow always goes missing in between, and they represent quite a significant number for the DAs, particularly in the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape. And those are areas that I think that the DA should not lose sight of. As far as the black electorate is concerned, particularly in the large urban metros, they are quite well developed. If you go to Soweto, if you go to Tshwane, if you go to a lot of our urban townships, there's a strong DA presence. But if they want to grow proportionally in all the provinces, then they're going to have to, you know, also remember that there is the other section of the colored and the Indian vote that they also have to appeal to, and the Afrikaans vote. Because when we talk about the white vote, we're talking about the English, we're talking about the Afrikaans vote. And one thing we know is that the foot and mouth disease, and I think this is where I differ with Bruce just a little bit, that I think the foot and mouth disease became the face of DA failure within the Afrikaans and agricultural sector. I mean, you just look at any post on any given day that John Steenhuisen makes, whatever he's talking about, within minutes, there's a barrage of comments, and they are all swearing at him. They're calling him names. They're calling him, and they're speaking in Afrikaans. You know, they're writing in Afrikaans. So you can tell that these are hardcore, you know, Afrikaner farmers who have nothing good to say about him. And I think that for the coming election, it's going to be one of the DA's toughest acts to reincite confidence amongst the Afrikaans and your conservative constituents, because they are the ones who I feel are the most angriest at John Steenhuisen at the moment. And they are the ones who have alternatives. If they are not happy within the DA, they can go to the Freedom Front Plus. They can go to Solidarity. They can even, you know, abstain their vote. You know, abstaining from voting is also a political choice, and it's a political decision that they have the right to make. So I think that the DA in the lead up to the local government election, number one, has to build up the confidence of its constituents that, yes, we are in the GNU, but yes, we do have a voice. We are going to take up issues. We are no longer going to just agree with everything the ANC says. We are going to remain true to who we are without antagonizing the current structure. That's an important point to make for their electorates. They also need to make the point that the Afrikaner, I don't want to call them right-wing, but your more conservative, right-leaning electorate is important. They need to make them feel important. They need to recognize them. They need to tell them they have a place within the Democratic Alliance. But I'm never sure what the messaging for the black vote is. I'm never sure what the DA ever has to offer to the black vote, because they're never quite clear about that.
But isn't that the challenge exactly, you know, of trying to talk to multiple audiences at the same time and pleasing all of them?
It definitely is. Because then it means you need to tailor your messaging according to the different groupings, which means that even in a manifesto, their manifestos, you know, as they usually release them ahead of any national election, you're never quite sure who this manifesto is talking to, because on the one hand, they're talking about bringing in the black vote, but at the same time, they're also fighting issues of BEE. You know, the DA in many ways has also lended its voice in the fight of the black economic empowerment in its current configuration. And that, of course, is not going to land very well within a black electorate. And so that's just one example of mixed messages messaging that I think the DA still needs to sort out. Are they caught in the black vote just for the fodder and for the numbers, but they don't really have a tangible plan? When the DA talks about the black voter, it's always through the eyes of poverty. It's always about weaponizing poverty and weaponizing the unemployment. They never speak to your upwardly mobile and the so-called clever blacks. There's never really an understanding that black people are not, you know, monolithic. They're not a homogeneous species. Mm. You know, there's upwardly mobile black people, there's poor black people, there's that kind of black people, but there's never really a clear strategy of which kind of black person are we talking to? What are we saying to them? That's where I've not yet heard real comprehensive messaging from the Democratic Alliance.
That's very interesting, just as we're wrapping up, because Peter believes that there can be a center that includes everyone, irrespective of their race, you know, or color, you know, as it were. So we'll see what happens in the election as to whether you're right or whether Peter is right.
If I can interrupt you, Mark, I'm going to interrupt you very briefly. Yeah. That's what the new leaders are going to need to address. Exactly what Kanye is saying.
Yeah,
she's absolutely right
about the message.
The DA talks about blacks in terms of poor ones, you know, but it needs to join a much more national and normal conversation. And it's going to be up to the next leader to get that right. It's a balance that the DA has got spectacularly wrong up until now. And, you know, that's the job of the new leadership if they want to be, if they want to push ahead as a party.
Okay. Well, that's where we're going to wrap it up on the Politics Weekly for this week. And I'd like to thank my guests, Peter Bruce, who's the former editor of Business Day and Financial Mail and host of Podcasts from the Edge, as well as Kanye Makubane, who's a political analyst and commentator. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. Until next time, stay well, stay safe, and let's continue doing good for our country.